Hi, and welcome to the Friends Church Podcast. It's Jeff here, and I'm excited that you're willing to carve out some time to listen to one of our Sunday messages. You were part of a growing community of online listeners who are downloading our messages to support their spiritual journeys, to find ways to make a positive impact in their world, which is really exciting because that's exactly why we're providing this podcast. If you're finding value in what we're doing, I would like to ask you to join others within our tribe who financially support the work of Friends Church. Some view their support in a similar way that they see their monthly fitness club or boot camp dues, where they're paying 50 to 200 bucks a month. Others see it similar to their Apple Music or SoundCloud subscription, where they're paying 10 to 15 bucks a month. Amounts are personal to everyone, but every dollar donated will go into products like this. If you're willing, you can donate easily by visiting www.friendschurch.ca and clicking the red donate button. This will lead you to the Canada Helps portal that is used by many nonprofit organizations to process credit card payments. Just enter your information, including your donation amount, and click the General Fund tab. On behalf of Friends Church Tribe, welcome. We're glad you found us, and thank you. Now enjoy this week's message.
So, good morning, everybody. I'm on a diet. Whenever I say that, people always look at me and they're like, but seriously, this is like the best diet in the world. There's no counting anything's calories or points or any of that stuff. As you can tell, you get pretty skinny. But it's incredible. I started this diet a while ago. It's called a Banting diet. Anyone heard of the Banting diet? You basically, it's kind of like the Atkins diet. They just made it a little bit better. But the way it works is this. You don't eat a whole lot of carbs. You eat a lot of kind of like high fat stuff. So like instead of having a skim latte, you have a full fat latte. In fact, you get it made with whipping cream. It's beautiful. So here's the deal. I want to invite you guys all to start my diet this week. It's a good one, I'm telling you. Look at this. Skinny, right? For me, it actually didn't start with wanting to lose weight. Although, you know, I'm creeping into the 40s, eating a quarter pounder every afternoon with a big Coke. It was starting to show. Starting to get a little softer than I prefer, right? Looking down and suddenly it's like, But what it was is I started doing triathlons. And my personality is kind of like, well, if I'm going to do a half Ironman, what else? Like, what's the next harder thing? See what, you know, let's make it harder. And then I realized they don't really like swimming because swimming is kind of boring. Any swimmers out there? Yeah, Ange. You're just like, then you turn around, then you turn around. It's just like, one day I was in the pool and I'm like, this is super boring. Why am I doing this? And so I cut swimming out. But I kept running and I started doing, so the biking component, I do a bike to raise money for cancer and I kept doing that every year. But I started running and then again, running just gets bigger, you know, half marathon, full marathon. And then I heard of this thing called the ultra marathon. I love when they put ultra in front of words, right? Ultra strong. It's just, it's like better. Ultra good. It's like, you know, this delicious cake. It's the ultra chocolatey thing. It's like more chocolate than you could possibly imagine. So when you put ultra in front of marathon, it should make a better marathon, right? No, it's just longer. I always thought like maybe like, I heard of this one. There's like drink stations where they serve beer and wine all the way around. I was like, that sounds like an ultra marathon. Like that's better. But no, these ones just got longer. So the one I signed up for is a 161-kilometer trail run that you do all in one shot. I'm not sure why I thought that was fun, but it's kind of how my brain works. It's like, what's harder? That one's harder. Now I'm at the place where I'm constantly checking to see if I'm actually going to do it or if I'm going to die, you know, where the first aid stations are, things like that. But I sat down with my coach and I said, okay, I want to do this ultra marathon. He says, okay, Klaus, you got to change your diet. Like right now, you have to go on a diet. And I'm thinking, like, I'm a pretty thin guy. What's the big deal? But he goes, no. Here's the deal. If you want to do something called an ultra marathon, you have to retrain your body to work differently. So let me get a little science-y for you here to try and convince you why this diet is the best thing in the history of dieting. When you run long distances, your body's using up calories, right? And most of the calories we get in and our body runs on is carbohydrates, sugar. So that's all fine and good. Most of us, you know, use, you know, you're walking around your day, you eat, you know, your carbohydrates, and everything balances out. But when you're running, you use a lot of carbohydrate calories. And your body stores quite a bit in it. It stores about 2 hours worth of running of energy in it. And then as you're running, that stuff gets used up. You're eating, but you can't eat enough to fulfill it because your stomach can't process that much food. So, Corey, can you throw up that graph? This is the graph. It's really technical. It starts up here, you know, with about, most people have about, I don't know, 1,200 calories, give or take, let's say 500. And as you run, that goes down. And you're eating as fast as you can, and it goes down. And usually about 4 hour mark, you cross the 0 point. Someone asked me why the graph goes down. I'm like, well, because you're kind of dead at that point. But when you hit that 0 point right there, your brain shuts down. It doesn't shut down altogether, but you get dumb. So a friend of mine, my running partner, was doing the death race 2 years ago. And he gets to a checkpoint, he's about 10 hours in, and he's not doing well. He hasn't been eating properly, and he's starting to get in this bad place. And he's starting to get close to that 0 point. But he's like, he makes the checkpoint by about 2 minutes. If he's any slower, they would have kicked him off the race. And now he's got to make the next checkpoint. It's about 2 hour run away. So he's like, okay, I'm sprinting. And he's like, Vince, I was just like head down. Like, you know, in the Olympics, when you see these guys sprinting, that's me. And I'm just cooking it. And all of a sudden, this guy runs up beside me. And I'm like, you're like the fastest guy in the world. But then he passes me and he slows down to a walk and I'm like, this is like some Olympic walking, you know, those speed walking guys? Like how, I am, and then the guy slows down because even walking he's going too fast. And my buddy's just like, he can't comprehend how this guy can walk that slowly and be going this fast. The guy looks over at my buddy and he's like, you okay? My buddy's like, and then I realized I am sprinting and not really moving at all. His brain had shut down so badly that he just couldn't figure out what was going on anymore. So that's what happens. So if you cross, you know, about the half marathon to marathon distance, bonking becomes a big issue. Your body just runs out of stuff that your brain needs to run, and then it shuts down everything. So my coach says, if you try and fuel this race with carbohydrates, that's going to be you. I'm running so fast and not even moving. So he says, here's what you do. You train your body to run on body fat. He did the math for me right there. He's like, so this is what your body fat percentage is. This is how much you weigh. You have 30 days of energy on you right now in body fat. Carbohydrates, you have about 2 hours. Fat, you have 30 days. So he says, we're going to teach your body to use the body fat that it stores to fuel this race for you. Sounds pretty good, huh? So on this diet, anytime you don't eat something, and you're not really hungry. This morning I ate, I usually have half an Egg McMuffin for breakfast. I had two halves of an Egg McMuffin. I was like, oh, I'm so full. Oh, I shouldn't have eaten that second one. But every time you don't eat something, that comes off your body, right? If you've got a little tummy, like, you know, I'm 40 years old, I eat a little McDonald's, get a little tummy. I don't eat something, it comes off my stomach. Comes off your thighs, comes off your butt, comes off anywhere that you have body fat, your body starts to eat that to fuel itself. Tell me that's not a good diet. And it goes further than that. So because your body, and this is going to get way beyond what I know, so I'm going to give you kind of the broad strokes, and I see a doctor sitting right here looking at me, and I'm like, oh boy, I better get this one right. What they're saying now in studies is carbohydrates, when your body consumes carbohydrates, it creates an inflammation response. And so a lot of the inflammation in our bodies is actually because of the foods we eat. There's a story of the guy who actually started this diet. His name's Tim Noakes. He was diabetic or pre-diabetic in that area. He was having all kinds of problems. And so he changed his diet. He switched over to this diet that I'm doing called Banting. Well, actually, he made it kind of. Within a month, no diabetes issues whatsoever. He dropped, 10 pounds. He's eating half of what he normally does. You know that 2 o'clock brain fog you get when you need a coffee or a Coke or something like that? Yeah, that's not a problem either. Because your body has so much fuel. So you don't have to count calories. You don't have to count points. You eat less, so it's cheaper. I think that's an awesome idea. It basically eats all the body fat that you want to get rid of anyways. If you're into ultramarathoning, it's awesome for that too. So why wouldn't you do this diet? Normally, this is the part where they say for 3 easy payments of $19.95, then I'll throw in a second diet for free. But the reality is it is free. You just do it. It's easy. So why am I telling you about this diet? One, because it's changed my life. I can run the 30 hours I need to run an ultramarathon. My day, I'm creative all day long. You can skip a meal and you're not even hungry. I used to be, finishing a meal thinking about the snack I was going to eat next because I was already hungry. That stuff's gone. So here I am telling you guys about a diet that none of you want to know about, do you? Thank you. But isn't it interesting when we're passionate about something, we want to share it with someone around us? The number of people I've told about this stupid diet is crazy. My coach, we hit a section of this message, I'm like, okay, but no, listen to this diet. And I start telling him about the diet. I tell everyone about the diet. How about you? You have something in your life? You get a new workout routine or a new parenting thing that you got. I always hear it in business meetings. People are like, oh, this new book and this new system, you got to try. And everyone's like, oh yeah, we'll totally try it. When you're passionate about something, you share it. So let's take a second and think of the last thing you shared with your friends, with your family, something that you just like, oh, this is awesome. You guys got to know about this. And now ask yourself this. When is the last time you shared your faith with someone? Suddenly it kind of feels like, ugh. We're passionate about things in our lives. We share them. Y'all got up this morning or downloaded the podcast for a reason. It's not because you had nothing better to do. And yet for some reason, sharing our faith is different than for me sharing my diet. And yet, isn't our faith good in our lives? You guys aren't here because you have nothing better to do. So there's a reason you're here, and yet the same passion that leads us to share a diet, we don't share our faith. I told you last week about sitting with my mom, and oh, every time I even start talking about this story, I get all emotional. Because I can see my mom. She's sitting across from me in her reclining chair. She can't sit straight anymore because she's got cancer so bad that it's wrecking her bones. My dad, her husband of 49 years, is losing it. All the kids are losing it. We're watching our mom die in front of us. And there's this little old lady, high as a kite, she's got so much pain. But in a moment of clarity, she looks at me and she kind of like looks out the corner of her eye and she says, Vincent. She always calls me Vincent. Vincent. God is a God of peace. And she died peacefully because of her faith. Is that not worth sharing? I don't even know if I believe all that my mom believes. I don't think it matters. I just watched a woman go through the most horrific thing I can conceive of. And she did it peacefully. There's something about our faith that's powerful, isn't it? And for the most part, it's beautiful. The band played that song, Beautiful Thing. It's beautiful. And if it's powerful and it's beautiful, why don't we share it? And I don't say that to guilt you, because I'm the same way. I'm reticent. So today I want to talk about this issue. Why is it that we don't talk about our spirituality? We're in this is probably the fourth week of our Roman series. Jeff started it off talking a bit about kind of the Bible as a whole. And we take the Bibles, so in this case we're working on a book a guy named Paul wrote to a community called the Romans. And yeah, it wasn't written to us. The culture isn't anything like ours. But I think when we let these words challenge us, it can push our spirituality. And so Jeff talked about a new way of looking at the Bible. Said maybe this isn't the words of God written to you, but maybe it's stories of people interacting with God. And those stories can inspire us. And hopefully that's what we're going to be able to do today. The second week he talked a little bit about, what did he talk about? Oh yeah, he talked about this idea of what our faith is for. And he talked about how it can change the world around us. Last week I talked about this deep place inside of us that I call God. That place that Alessandra started off today by saying there's a yearning, a longing for it. And today I want to talk about what do we do with that? And why we don't do things with that. And why sometimes I'm going to go out on a limb here and say we shouldn't do something with that, and sometimes we should. So I'm reading through the intro of Paul. We're on verse like 7 at this point. Someone asked me if we're going to get to chapter 8. In about 3 years, maybe. He's just got so much good stuff. Like, it's just like, every line, I'm like, whoa. And he says this line. He says, I'm longing to see you so that I may share with you some spiritual gift to strengthen you, or rather so that we may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine. And if you're not a super linguistic geek, you might miss this, but check this out. Spiritual gift. Singular. For those of you who have some church background, you've heard of spiritual gifts. Plural. It's kind of like these ideas of spiritual competencies or spiritual things that you're good at. He's not talking about that here. This is singular. I think what he's getting at is he's saying, my spirituality is a gift to you and yours to me. And as I'm sitting in my office thinking about this and trying to reflect on this, going, wait a second, if my spirituality is a gift to other people, why don't I share it? Why don't we share it? And I had a moment of guilt, but that didn't last very long because that's not how I rule. It's more like saying, do you feel like your spirituality can improve other people's lives? Do we feel like sharing our spiritualities with other people, that we can actually, that process is going to actually make their lives better? Because if we believe those things, then how we're acting and what we believe aren't meshing very well, are they? Now, I think there's some complexities, and this is going to help you guys get off the hook. If anyone's feeling guilt, this is the part where I'm going to make it all go away, hopefully. Canadian culture has one really unique part to it. I was reading a book by a guy named Joel Thiessen, The Meaning of Sundays. Fantastic book. He's a sociologist actually writing out of Calgary here. He wrote this. A central observation is that the guiding argument in this book, that faith is a private matter that should not be forced on to others, resonates strongly with young members of religious minority groups who are navigating their faith in Canada today. It's a really nice way of saying, Canadian culture doesn't like when you share your faith. Think about it. I was driving to the airport the other day, Sikh cabbie. So you know, I'm right. I was like, hey, tell me about Sikhism. Leery. Doesn't want to say too much. Because if he tried to convert me, what would I do? I'd call the taxi commission and be like, this guy's proselytizing. Like, we don't like that, right? There's something in Canadian culture that says sharing your faith. Well, I wrote it down this way. I believe our cultural upbringing wires into our heads that sharing one's religion or spiritual beliefs is distasteful, if not outright wrong. Is distasteful, if not outright wrong. The core of being Canadian is that we don't like to talk about our spirituality. And we don't like other people to talk about their spirituality to us. We're okay with people having their spirituality. Just don't try and ram it down my throat. Right? That's one of the cores of being Canadian. And so here we are, Canadians, many of us born Canadian, going, hey, I have this thing that I'm passionate about, but somehow in my brain I'm wired to not talk about this because our culture doesn't like it. And you can see the difference. You look at, you know, American news and American politics. Oh, man, it's completely different. When's the last time you saw a Canadian politician reference spirituality in any way, shape, or form? This is not how we roll. So, even if we have this passion of our spirituality, there's something wired into our culture that says, yeah, how about we not talk about that? Second thing, I was at an atheist church on my sabbatical. I talked a bit about it, and I know people think, why would you go to an atheist church? I'm like, I go to church every week. I want to try something different, see what other people are doing. I can learn from anybody. And this was fascinating. So I'm sitting there, and we had a meet and greet. By the way, you guys, we don't make you do a meet and greet. We had a 5-minute meet and greet with the person next to us I'd never met. I'm supposed to visit for 5 minutes with them. It was hell. So if you want to know where hell is, that's where it is. Some of you, I'm sure, would be thinking, that's great. We were talking, at the end, I learned some new running spots. We had a great time. He was this nice gentleman, blah, blah, blah. But through the whole service, it was this amazing experience, and it took me a second to catch it. Anytime one of the speakers would say something against Muslims, we'd all kind of go, oh, yeah. Hindus, yeah. Something against Christians, everyone would be like. And at first, I was like, are we plotting? I don't even know what I'm plotting for. Kind of go through a couple times, and suddenly I realize, oh, anytime someone says something against a Christian, y'all love that. So I'm looking next to my buddy, I'm like, boy, I'm sure glad we didn't start with, what do you do for a living? I think I would have said, I'm a welder. I think it'd be okay to lie in that situation, right? It's for his own sake. But here's the deal. And we've all felt this. I'm in a party. This happens to me more probably than you guys. What do you do for a living? I don't tell them I'm a welder. I say I'm a pastor. And everything suddenly shifts. So it's kind of like. The nice ones just kind of ignore me. The not-so-nice ones start to rip me a new one for every horrible thing that any Christian has ever done to them. The newest iteration is to rip me a new one for all the horrible things Christianity has done in history. And here's the deal. What they're saying isn't a lie. It's true. Horrible things have been done in the name of Christianity. Horrible things are being done by people who identify themselves as Christians. I thought about telling you a few stories of the different options here. I decided, no, I don't want to go there. Because some of the stories I've heard, it's just a nightmare. But here we are in a culture that already does not really value sharing religious thoughts with each other. And now we identify as part of a group that has done horrible damage in the name of that religion. The person you're talking to, or the person you may talk to about your spirituality, chances are they've been hurt by someone calling themselves a Christian. Sometimes it's within families. It's people going, you don't live in the Christian way, therefore you're going to be out. It's being kicked out of churches, kicked out of community. Jody was telling me from part of the queer community, people actively say to her, you're going to hell. Like, who says that to another person? Like, whether you believe in hell or not, that's not a I love you sentiment, is it? This is the legacy we're dealing with. Chances are the people you may share your spirituality with, they've had bad experiences by someone calling them a Christian. So the very label you're giving themselves instantly puts them on the defensive. And chances are that even the word Christian for some will trigger them. That word means hypocrite, closed-minded, elitist, sexist, racist, any ist that's bad. So there you are in a culture already that doesn't value this, speaking to somebody who, when you say the label that you may identify with, instantly all that horrible stuff is going through their head and they're looking at you. Why don't we talk about a religion? Because it kind of sucks, doesn't it? Most times, this discussion will start with an apology. I am so sorry for what Christians or people who call themselves Christians have done to you. I am so sorry. Doesn't even start with talking about it yet. It starts with that. Makes sense why we don't say a whole lot, doesn't it? Goes further than this. How many of you think your faith is a good thing? Don't put up your hand. Just let me put up my hand. Some of you, and I know some of you, are still in a spirituality that's connected to fear and guilt and not being enough. And your spirituality is somehow trying to fix all that crappy stuff that you feel, not because you're bad, not because there's anything wrong with you, but because your spirituality says there is something wrong with you, and the fix is to believe this so that you can somehow feel okay about yourself. Who would want to share that with someone they love? You start off with, you're a horrible person. You're a sinful person. You're a bad person. And I can help you with that, but you need to feel horrible. What a great start line, right? That's the thing you tell the people you don't like. Hey, I don't like you. Can I share my faith with you? It's going to make your life a living hell. Is our faith a good thing? Jesus uses the word gospel. If you've ever heard the word gospel, it actually literally means good news. Is your faith, is your spirituality good news? And let me just jump on a piece here. For those of you who believe in a literal hell, totally cool. I'm a bit different, but in Friend Church, there's a variety of opinions. But here's the deal. If you believe in a literal hell, it creates a different way of talking about spirituality. Often the line kind of goes like this. There's something wrong with you, that something happened so that you don't have to go to hell. If that thing didn't happen, you would go to hell. So if you believe in this mechanism, I'm going to share my good news with you, but you have to believe this mechanism first. See how this works? Every once in a while, a YouTube video will pop up on my screen. You're going to hell. You're a sinner. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get me to believe in this thing so that they can give me the good news. But this isn't. Is that good news? Is it good news to a person who doesn't believe in this? Now, some of you are saying, Vince, I don't care. That's true. And I would gently push back and say, all of what we talk about here are models of God. We're talking in faith land. There's nothing proving here. We believe. We don't know. And if you're sharing your good news and it's only good news, if a person believes a whole bunch of other beliefs that you have, chances are it's not good news for them. If that's where you are, I want to encourage you this. Reflect on your faith and ask yourself, is what I believe good news? Not if you believe all this other stuff, it's good news. No, no, no. Is it good news? Is it what Jesus talked about? I bring to you good news. Because if it's not good news, I don't know about you, but I'm not sharing it. If my diet made me feel like crap all the time, I wouldn't tell you guys about it. Reflect, wrestle, process, ask yourself, is what you believe good news? Okay, so one more thing. I'm going to bring up someone to help me out with. Christina, can you come up? This is Christina Hart. Everyone give her a round of applause. I said to Christina, hey, can you come up? She's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I'm not going to tell you. She's like, well, what are you going to talk about? I said, I'm not going to tell you that either. So tell me, she's an amazing person. Thank you for coming up.
Thank you.
Everyone, Christina, she's actually been working with our teens recently on helping them understand, how do I say that? You'd call it sacred sexuality, but I don't even know what that means. So it has to do with how gender interacts with the world and each other. And how when you understand how things work, the interaction between genders just becomes so much easier.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Did I get it?
It's perfect.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple questions. Do you own a car?
Yes.
What kind of car is it?
Toyota Yaris.
Okay. That's one of those little guys?
Yes.
Fairly new?
No, 2008.
Okay. So the motor's starting to get a little bit old?
Yes.
Do you plan to rebuild the motor yourself?
No.
You sure?
No. I have no plans to rebuild the motor myself.
Because today I am selling a slightly used valve clamp. Would you like to buy this for me?
No. Nope.
Okay, but before you say no, hold on a second. This, when you take your motor apart and you open it all up, there's a head, and inside the head there's valves. The valves have springs on them. This helps you compress the valve springs. Now, do you want to change your answer?
No.
Okay, but before you, hold on a second, before you say no. This is like, I have two of these because I have a crappy old one. This is like the Cadillac of valve spring compressors.
No, I'm not interested. Nope.
Still not? No. Okay, but you can replace these so it fits on different motor styles.
Yeah, no.
Still nothing?
No, I'm not really interested.
Folks, give her a round of applause. Thank you very much. That's what I needed. Thank you. See why I didn't tell her what I was going to talk about? She's like, I would never have come up if you'd have done that. But here's the reality. This is how often we've talked about our spirituality. We've tried to sell something to people who don't want it. Think about that. Why would I sell this to her? She has no desire to rebuild her motor. And yet, somehow in our brains, we think spirituality is somehow different. Spirituality, oh no, no, no. Everybody wants my spirituality. Now, I do think you should have, this is a really good spring compressor, I'm just saying. Really good one. But I use this as a metaphor to say this. How often do we either think or act? When I say share your faith, what do you think? standing in a street corner, yelling your faith at some random stranger who has no desire to talk to you about it, right? Or the other way, walking down the street and have some random person saying, hey, you need to, what is it, the sign on Olympic Plaza, repent or die. I don't want to hear that crap. So today, here's what I want to invite you guys to do. Stop sharing your faith with people who don't want to hear it. Just stop. For the sake of the person you're talking to, stop. I've heard so many horror stories of people who someone's just trying to ram it down their throat. Stop. For the sake of all of us, because we all live in a legacy of someone trying to ram spirituality down someone else's throat, and when we walk up and say, hi, I'm a Christian, they're like, you're going to try and sell me this stupid valve spring compressor. Now, I don't know how many of you, and maybe podcast probably is a bit bigger group, some of you are guilty of this. So here's the homework I want to give you. Before you talk about your faith, ask the people in your life, even the people you love so dearly, even the people you're going, I want you to have this so badly, it's killing me. Ask them, do you want to hear about my faith? Just ask straight up. And if they say no, honor that. You see how this thing changes? Paul says, I want to give my spiritual gift, the gift of my spirituality, to people who actually want that gift. When I talk about sharing your faith, and the band, come on up. When I talk about sharing your faith, that's not what comes into our heads, is it? It's sharing something we may or may not believe with someone who does not want to hear it. It's us ramming something down someone else's throat. Today, I want to give you permission to let that all go. My spirituality isn't something provable, it's something I believe, it's something that changes my life. It's something that when I'm tied into it, I am a better person. The people in my life, I am better to them. When we as a community are tied into that, we take more water to each other, to ourselves, to the world around us. It is beautiful. It's life-changing. It's world-changing. But it only works when we let go of this idea of selling something to someone we don't want. And we do the hard work of making our spirituality something that's actually good news. Not good news if we believe a bunch of other stuff that's not good news. No, no. Good news. So that's what I want you guys to do today. If you're scared to share your faith because you're not sure it's good news, it's time to wrestle. If you're sharing your faith with people who do not want to hear it, no matter how much you want them to have your spirituality, just stop. And then go into that deep place inside of each of us that I believe is that God place. And let the passion and love and peace and all that stuff flow into your life. If someone asks you what's going on, by all means, tell them. And if they don't, let it go. So that's the Friends Church model right now. Things change. They're sharing your faith. I wanted to leave you guys with the last song. They were playing it, and I was like, oh, we need to hear this song again. Beautiful Things. Because if we see our faith as a beautiful thing, we can't help but share it, right?